Hey, Coop.
Yeah, Dylan?
Dude, you remember Macross?
Seven?
That one.
With the multiple.
Yeah, how foolish of me.
With the multiple episodes, and the guy who's all like.
Some might say more than seven, even.
Oh my goodness. It's plus seven.
Man, this is a very Monday energy.
Yeah,
I'm just letting you know right now.
The Mondays are powerful. Hey, I got sleep this week. And had a good breakfast, so it's just peak Monday energy. I think it's coming through rather than tiredness. But as always, I am Coop with this debonair man whose name starts with D. It's a Dylan.
Oh, why, thank you. Yes, that it's true. My name is Dylan.
You can look it up. It's legally Dylan. how are you doing, my dude?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm just chilling, honestly. It's been a pretty chill weekend. I don't really have much to talk about outside of the Strive beta.
Oh, boy.
And we've talked about the Strive beta off mic.
We've talked about the Strive beta a lot. Hey, if you like fighting games, maybe that's one you should play when it comes out. Or, I don't...
I wasn't sure how I was going to feel. Because, like, Guilty Gear's always been a thing where it's like, I love the aesthetic. And I can play it on a very low level, but, like, it was very intimidating for me to jump into. Strive is, like, very approachable as a filthy casual.
Because Strive, like, in my book is like, hey, yo, you like that Guilty Gear? Hey, do you like Street Fighter 4? The speed of Street Fighter 4 and how poke heavy it is? Yeah, I do.
Yeah, honestly, it gives me a bit of a King of Fighters feel, personally.
I get that.
Probably just because I've been playing a lot of SNK games, so. But there's something about the momentum, and then, of course, you have the long jumps, you have the air dashes. It's not quite King of Fighters, but I feel like it's King of Fighters adjacent.
I get that. Now I'm just thinking of Persona 4 Arena again, because that game is...
Yeah, that game introduced me to the concept of short hops.
Yes! That game I would need to play on a stick, though, because even though it's four buttons, there's so many different combinations with those four buttons that I feel needs the El Stico Maximo. That's a term.
I never thought about that, because like, I mean, the last time I played Persona 4 Arena, I was using a stick, and I still had a PS3. But I always just kind of remembered it being, like, the macro buttons were pretty convenient from what I remember. Mm. Maybe I'm just misremembering.
Though the macros, I do remember a lot of people using them being convenient, but I was all like, I'm gonna be a real one. And it was pretty easy to be a real one, so I'm like...
I mean, I feel that. When I play King of Fighters,
for me,
it's also
anyways.
A four-button game. Yeah, no, I understand what you mean. When I play King of Fighters, which is also a four-button game, I also just... I input everything manually.
Mm. I get that. Yeah, a lot of people talking about dash moves and stuff, the dash button, and I'm like, it's just easier for me to... dash and get this sweet callus on my thumb from doing it on the D-pad.
Yeah, I feel that. I want to incorporate the dash button more, but it's so weird on Fight Stick. Guilty Gear is just a weird game because it's a five-button fighting game.
Yeah.
And so, like, four and six, my brain can, like, handle that. But when you have an odd number, it's just kind of like, well, what do I do with this How what is the most comfortable way to arrange this?
And it gets even weirder when you think about, like, the traditional stick controls of that game, where it's kind of like an arch instead of your classic just four in a box or six or whatever. So it's, it is kind of, it's a bit overwhelming. I think for me, the way that kind of gets kind of at least calmed in my brain is, again, I play on pad for Guilty Gear, and then I just have Dust set to R1.
R1, yeah. So that's how I used to play Guilty Gear, and when I first tried playing Accent Core last year, I was like, I had my fight stick at that time, but I was like, nah, pad still feels more comfortable, mm-hmm. but now I'm diving into Strive with the fight stick, and I'm like, oh, this is really fun. It feels really good to Oonga Boonga Roman cancel. But yeah, I don't know what I'm doing with my Dust button, because I can never find a place where it feels comfortable.
Mm, I get that.
Which, like, maybe the bottom line is I just need to move my hand, because it's like, the way I have it lined up right now, it's like, thumb is on punch, my index, middle, and ring finger are on kick slash and heavy slash, and then with Dust, it's like, I can map it to my pinky, but that doesn't feel right, and it also doesn't feel right to move my ring finger to press Dust, which, like, I think the bottom line is I just need to move my hand like I'm playing Street Fighter, but my brain needs to overcome that mental hurdle.
Yeah, because we were talking earlier about incorporating new tech, and my brain in matches was all like, could I win, or should I take the L's so I can learn the tech and be able to incorporate it? Because solid game plan already, but if I make that game plan better by taking some L's, it's... Anyways, so... Well,
no matter what, you play to win. It's just like, after the match, you got to reflect on what went wrong or what went right, you know.
Yeah, actually, when we were playing the other night, I was like, I'm switching to Nago because I feel like I'm doing to you what I did to Chris in high school, so I don't want to do that again weren't. To people.
You weren't. Honestly, it was a combination of it being late on my end, and then also just like, yeah, still getting used to fight stick.
Mm.
So I think if I was playing on pad, if I'd been practicing on pad, I would have been able to pick it up a little faster, but... I'm enjoying this transition to a new output.
Yeah, I was just, I'm happy that's not the case, but my brain was having flashbacks to that hard drive article. Person
good. Nah, you're good.
Person good enough to beat all friends, but not good enough. Anyways, but now the dust is close to settling on that till the game comes out. But there's a lot of dust that gets kicked up in these episodes of Macross 7, is that right, Dylan?
Yeah, I'll say. I wasn't expecting the story to go here.
Yes. The end of an arc, you could say. But let's just...
Honestly, if I remember correctly, this kind of addresses an issue I was having with Macross 2.
Ooh.
We'll talk more about that as we get into the episode, but let's go.
I look forward to hearing that. So,
right.
Episode 37, we're right where we left off. The power has been being taken to the dream, and Basara and crew have awoken the sunken city, and Mylene and Gamlin land on the city to join them, but they take off. Civil takes off with Basara and Giggle in tow, and they go through the universe. Elsewhere, Exidal has been attached to some Valkyries, and he's being airlifted to the ruins. It's a pretty good sight. And Max is like, why do you have to go here? And Exidal's like, you're not telling me anything, dude. And Exidal's like, I don't want to say anything for sure, but this might answer some of our major protoculture questions. So I'll let you know. But once he's, oh boy, once he does see the island, though, and see the ruins, he's sure that he'll get the answers he's been waiting for. And then back, one of the, I believe this is one of the bridge crews, like, oh, this is just like a movie. We're finding the hidden ruins. And then back on Gepelnitz's ship, a grunt reports to them about the ruins, and Gepel is just like, I want this destroyed ASAP. This does not go kosher with my farm plan. Just get rid of it. Get rid of it. Get rid of it now. And over at the apartment in Akusho, Ray's like, okay, where's Basara? Where'd he go? And hey, looky there. Flower Girl in her spot overlooking. She's going to be here for this whole trio of episodes on the hill overlooking the planet. Hey, look, she's got a new boombox and she's chilling. Anyway, speaking of places and chilling, Sivil and the boys are flying through space, and they're doing that this whole episode. They're going on a magical mystery tour. And at the ruins, Exodol has run on in with Gamblin and Mylene right behind them. But she's pretty out of it, especially given Basara just up and taking away as soon as they landed. So that's what's got her the most. And the ruins soon shake and open up to reveal a huge mural depicting the history of the protoculture. And it's close enough to Sentradi script that Exodol can read it. And the trio do continue to fly through space, and Exodol starts reading the script, saying the protoculture had pretty humble beginnings. But then they got to space, and two factions split up, and they started fighting, and one of the factions created the Sentradi to keep themselves from getting their hands dirty. And then they eventually decided, let's create something worse, which they call the evil, as things continue to escalate. Basara is still dazzled. It's like, oh, this universe is pretty cool, dude. And Max is...
yeah, he's just enjoying this siesta.
Yes, he's vibing. And Max is watching on as Exodol continues to go through the mural, and he's pretty disappointed that things went down this way for his ancestors. And we go back to Gepelnitz, and Gepelnitz wants Sivil gone. That's pretty much it. Get rid of her. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Go. Go. The proto-Devlin end up, we learn through the mirror, were the end of proto-culture. They ended up taking over the evil. So, coming from another dimension, taking them over. So, that's kind of how we got up with all this. And it's mentioned that they have a very devil-like nature. And Mylene then instantly thinks of Sivil and gets even more worried. So, yeah. And a wall soon opens up in front of them. And Exodol's like, I'm going to put out my probes and see what we can learn. But he's stopped by a plaque that says, nope, only a sign of peace can proceed. And so they try to open it up, and one of the grunts is like, I'm going to shoot it. Which is that great idea. And the bullets...
the fucking...
So the bullets start ricocheting, and they set off a Neil trap, and one grazes Mylene, but her blood drips on the ground and opens the door.
Very good thing that it only scratched Mylene. Yeah. And it was only a scratch.
It was only a scratch. Because that could have, boy, that
could have gone a lot worse.
Yeah, it could have. Much worse. Much worse.
But, like, of all the people, it was the one who needed to get scratched.
Yep. The symbol of peace, again.
We'll get into that in a second, yep. But I just wanted to point out how funny it was to me.
Yep, babies are powerful. And then, deculture. Because Exodol, he's shocked at the door opening. And behind this door is a shining being keeping a message from the protoculture for the future that they left behind. And hey, as we said, the side of peace is what we think it is. It's Mylene. It's babies. It's Zentradi and human baby. It means the war is over, allegedly.
If you want it.
If you want it to be. And the being says, yo. So that evil, as we kind of lit on earlier, it was possessed by these demons from another dimension. So that's how we got the proto-Devlin. But as it starts going on, the G-Boys and a flock of fighters arrive, because they're going to go ahead and destroy the ruins. And the being goes on about what we know about Spiritia, how the proto-Devlin needed to live. And Gamblin, through hearing this, starts piecing together, oh, that's why they've been attacking us, because they need this Spiritia. And the being goes on that in the past, the proto-Devlin got so greedy and lusty over this life juice that they wiped out all life in the galaxy, all life in the universe. But they doomed themselves in the process. But for some reason, they were sealed away by a great power known as Anima Spiritia. Where have I heard that before?
Anima Spiritua? Huh. Next you'll say something about a spiritual paradise.
It's woo. Power to the dream, am I right? So Basara is singing that now. As they go through the universe, he's living for this. And everybody starts piecing all this that we know now all together. And the being goes further to say, hey, if there's Anima Spiritia, there's still hope. But the attack has started. And we think, oh, this isn't good. But hey, the protoculture put up a force field, so it's good. But only Basara can really get through it. Exodol begins relaying what he knows on over to Max from this. Again, the proto-Devlin can't get in, but Basara can, since he's the chosen one. And Max gets a little confused, because Exodol's like, hey, thanks for Mylene so we could open this up. And he's like, what? What? And he's meaning more thanks for, you know, our peace agreement, because, yeah, it's not Comelia, but he's like, remember the last time you had a baby that freaked people out and saved people?
Way to go, Max. Yeah. Thank you for having 9 children or whatever.
Thank you for having a lot of sex and not wearing a condom. So the Emerald Force come on in with the VF-11s behind them to protect the ruins. And Satan shows up and he's going to try and destroy the ruins barrier with his beam. Mylene and Gamblin start running for the Valk. She isn't running at first. But he's like, hey, you need to sing. And she's like, I don't know. Oh, come on, Mylene. But he's being a bit forceful in the whole singing thing. But she's like, no, you're right. I'm Sound Force. I should do this. And they end up joining in on the in the fight. And her singing is able to bring back the brainwashed pilots. And Gamblin's running defense for her in the meantime. And her song hits Satan. But he is like, just ignore it. Keep firing the beam. Break on through the ruins. And he goes into the beam himself and breaks on through to the ruins, but that mech is obviously gone. Exodol keeps on talking to the mysterious being, but Hiei flies on in through him and destroys him. And, hey, the ruins are up in smoke and they're gone. But hey, Exodol's all right. He survived. Popped out of some rubble, so he's good. He's good. And Gepelinch now is like, Sybil's not gone, but I need her to be gone now that these ruins are out of the picture. And it seems that Basara and the Magical Mystery Tour have returned from the galaxy, spread amongst the planet, as the bridge crew starts coordinating rescue operations. Exodol tells Max that they have no way of totally figuring out this anima spiritum mystery now that the ruins are gone. The Proto-Devlin wanted to keep that information from being even more spelled out to them, even though it's pretty spelled out to us. And Gamblin's like, God, I should have been able to protect these ruins. But Mylene shows up and she's singing. She's like, you called me Mylene. You didn't put a son or anything at the end of this. Yeah, boy.
Fucking poggers, mate.
And hey, the episode ends with Basara just sleeping in the field. Because, boy, he just went places.
He just had a good trip.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Ha, 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 ha,
ha, ha. Saw the galaxy, you know?
Are you sure that was a space woman or LSD, Basara? I was like, I don't know.
I mean, mm-hmm. She said her name was Lucy and she was in the sky with diamonds. I don't... Why can't it be both?
Mm-hmm, it's a good chance. Mm-hmm. But that's the episode. But a lot of... We got the lore dump this time. But that was good to finally see some more stuff on the proto-culture. But it wasn't like...
Yeah.
I kind of put it. It was like a lore dump, but it's like, you know this already, because we've already told you, but here's like more, even more concrete. Lay down. Here we go.
Yeah. I think the thing I like about this is, and I can't remember quite what my complaint was with Macross 2, because honestly, I don't remember Macross 2 very well.
Which is funny, because I don't either.
Yeah. So, the villains in Macross 2, they were what? They were another race.
Yeah.
That was basically just the Zentradi again, right?
Yeah, but they were using Ishtar's race, the emulators, to use their song to control
right
their Zentradi troops they had in charge of.
Man, that's such a good idea for a show. Yeah. I wish they had more time to flesh that out.
And they, I think I get where you're stepping in, because they kind of do that a little bit in 7, but it's not exactly the same.
It's not quite to the same, but it's got the same ethos to it, I think. Mm. You still have a race that, or I guess the Proto-Devlin are more of an entity, really.
Yeah.
That use the bodies of other alien races, and then on top of that, they... farm Spiritua. So Spiritua is like the result of pursuing a passion, regardless of what that passion is.
Hmm.
And they're like these passion leeches that drain all of that. And so they want to take that and they want to take humans and cultivate them into a farm. And there's something there, I feel like.
Hmm.
Like, just like, I'm thinking in terms of like, Neki Basara and his art, but also more specifically Shoji Kawamori, and you know his art, and I it makes me wonder like kind of what energy did he have going into Macross 7, because I feel like making the villains things that just consume culture and consume art with like no extra thought, it's sustenance for them. They don't know that they can create their own art. Like, I feel like the Proto-Devlin are born from, like, some deep-seated frustration, but I'm not going to psychoanalyze a dude I've never met.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not someone who... But, like, I guess, like, the concept behind it, and also seeing how the show deals so much with burnout and with, like... kind of fake corporate art, if we look at the jamming birds.
Yeah.
Like, all of that together kind of... I don't think this is like, let me psychoanalyze Shoji Kawamori through the art that he's created, but I do think there's something there, you know? Yeah,
I can see that.
And it makes me want to look more into, like, what was... Maybe not, like, what was Shoji Kawamori going through when he was creating this, but I guess it's, like, what was the reception to some of Shoji Kawamori's other stuff?
Mm.
And, like, yeah.
I
guess it's, like, I'm thinking about, like, how, where Yoshiyuki Tomino was when he created Turn A, and we have a, like, there's someone on Twitter doing a great translation of his memoir working on Turn A Gundam, and it makes me wonder if Shoji Kawamori was going through like a similar phase during this time.
I wonder that too, because you have shoutouts to Fees for doing that, or Fez.
Yes, the Twitter is at Fees, F-E-E-Z.
For doing that translation, because they're doing an amazing job. But, yeah, it's interesting because my brain went to Tomino and then also Anno, because it's their mindset throughout their projects has been pretty well documented. But with Kawamori, it's, you haven't, I haven't seen too terribly much, and he's kind of, in my brain, he's kind of Sid Meier, where you don't hear too terribly much in terms of any, you hear like the occasional thing of he didn't like a part of a project, and in my mind, the only part of that I hear from Kawamori is, oh, yeah, the bootleg Macross in America that means I can't bring it out to America. Like, that's the only thing I've heard him be pissy about. Like, because he's such a, because outside of like Macross and other stuff, the dude's kind of been a gun for hire in the design world for such a long time. So it's, I'm curious, and maybe I'm seriously curious to hear like a little more about his mindset in that, because he, it's, I'm taking hard guesses from what I've heard, but it sounds like the Macross series is most of what he's put all his energy into outside of getting gigs, gigs to do designs. Like, I don't know if Escaflowne, I don't think Escaflowne was completely him, but he did design work on that. And then,
it wasn't completely him, but I think he was like heavily involved in the planning stages.
Gotcha. Because I know that I'm also thinking of his Gundam designs, which were definitely guns for hire kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. Like that, the Devil Breakers in DMC5. Yeah.
And a bunch of other stuff.
I don't know, just...
It's interesting, yeah. It's...
Yeah.
It's something I am... I'll be curious. Gwen Campbell, hit me up if there's anything on... what was going on during this time, because if anybody would know it, it would be Gwen and the speaker pod guys, because I am curious to hear about his mindset at the time, because I imagine, oh yeah, and this was after Plus too, because that was like the only Macross thing that came out here in the States that got an international push with his involvement, really. So, and he was trying to produce a live action movie of Macross to be made in the US at that time too. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man, Harmony Gold really stabbed that in the foot. Man.
Then you start thinking, is the Proto Devlin his take on Harmony Gold and how he hopes one day he can talk them into not being assholes and tell them to go away? And put the... there's things you could read from it, but I don't think... I don't think he's going that deep with it, but who knows?
Right.
Yeah,
I don't want to read too much into it, because I have a bad habit of doing that. But, you know, I just wanted to... I think I more wanted to bring up the question for people to consider.
I'm thinking about myself. My goodness. But anyways, that's all I had for this episode. Did you have any other notes on this one before we move on?
Not really. These are like very, these are very plot heavy episodes, and ironically, that means I don't really have much to talk about. Just because it's kind of all there in the text, really.
Oh yeah.
Well, let me just go through the notes one more time and see if there's anything that jumps out to me.
Yeah, because this episode is basically just, yo, you want some of that delicious lore we rarely give out to you? Here you go. It's just confirming things you pretty much already know, but let's put a period on that.
Yeah, exactly. It's nice to have outright confirmation.
Mm.
And then also, if people haven't caught on to it, like, you know, now everyone's on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think we're good to move on to the next one.
All right. So, start of episode 8. The Valkyrie squads are hunting for Civil and Giggle after their galaxy tour, and they're running through the forest. And Civil's completely knocked out from the experience, so Giggle's carrying her. And elsewhere, the Valkyries, specifically Mylene, Gamlin, and Basar's Valks are being airlifted. And they're over in a transport ship, and Gamlin is still beating himself up about losing the ruins. And Mylene's like, hey, at least you learned something, huh? And when he's kind of mum, she turns over to Basar for support, but he's completely out of it. Like, he's been places and his human brain is trying to comprehend it all. So it's not working. But hey, Chill Flower Girl is chill on her hill, so she's there. And the Battle 7 finally transforms back and attaches to City 7. And in his office, Melia asks Max, okay, so why didn't you tell me about the ruins? And he's like, I didn't want to say anything till I knew more. And it's like, I need to know more because, you know, I have to protect the city. And I'm a Zentradi. And she kind of snaps when he goes, I'll remember that for the future. And he's like, what do you mean by that? But the tension gets kind of broken up because the bridge is like, hey, we need you up here, Max. And he's about to leave, and he's like, I'll send you a report. And he's a bit surprised, despite that tense talk. He's like, hey, you're letting yourself get dirtied up. Let me prune you a little bit here. And she fixes his collar and his uniform. And he's like, what? Like, a moment of warmth and care I haven't felt for a while? How about that?
Max comes across as incredibly touch-starved to me.
I can see that.
I feel so bad for this guy.
No. Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel bad for both parties. I'm not going to say, oh, Max is in the right, Millie is in the wrong, or vice versa. Like, they're... Oh, man.
They got a messy relationship complicated by the fact they're both political figures. So, right. It's like... Oh boy.
Just like seeing Max just kind of have these like generic deflect answers whenever he's talking with her. Oh man, it breaks my heart.
Oh yeah.
Dude.
Mm.
It's just like so. Like, I've been in that situation where it's like. I can only imagine it's like 1,000 times worse when this is someone you used. Like, you're married to.
Yeah. Mm hmm. Mm hmm.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I really hope that they either, you know, they don't have to get back together, but I really want them to clean. I want them to feel comfortable around each other.
Yeah, yeah. Or be able to, no matter what, at least bury the hatchet or figure out a better understanding. I don't know.
Exactly. Just, oh, man. I wanted to, I don't know why, like, that exchange hit me as hard as it did, but as I was watching, I was like, oh, shit, I gotta talk about I always get tripped on if it's Milia or Miria. Maybe it's because I'm thinking of Bakano, but, Milia. it was just a really strong character moment.
Because Boy, which makes this even more sad because how everybody, especially Exidol's going on about how, yo, you and your daughters, they're the galactic chosen ones that saved the day and opened up this ruin.
Yeah.
And they're and he's like, what?
Congratulations for falling in love. And Max is like, I fell in love once.
Yeah. What are feelings? Yeah. Anyways, Max arrives on the bridge. Gepelnitch is called, and Gepelnitch is like, you're going to stay here and live on my lovely little spiritual farm so we can use you for your energy. And yeah, we'll see ya. Stay here. And Exidol's like, this sea is his livestock, right? And Max is like, nope. Mm-hmm. Yo, everybody, you find an escape plan and you find it now. Mylene arrives with Basar at the apartment, and he's still out of it. Ray asks how his trip was, and Basar snaps out of it. He's like, dude, I just saw the galaxy. And Ray's a little taken off because Ray probably initially said, how was your vision quest? Not how was your tour across the galaxy you had last episode? Which is great. But yes.
Yeah, just drop some DMP.
But Firebomber's back. That flower has bloomed. And they start playing Planet Dance. And hey, it's actually, despite how much we heard it in the beginning, it's actually been a little while since they played that. So it's kind of nice to hear.
Yeah, I was about to say, I was feeling wistful for it.
Yeah, it's like, yep, this is the good stuff. And then over on Gebelnitch's ship, he is very pleased that this plan is, his dream is going along, but he's like, I need Civil and Giggle taken out. Just get rid of them. As soon as we land on the planet, you kill them. Just do that. Do that. Give them. And the Valkyrie squadrons have found Giggle and Civil at this point. But they're soon taken out by a mass assortment of mechs and the D-Boys. And the two of them are blown away by missile fire. And a grunt student shows up to try and life-suck Civil. And Giggle's watching on. And she calls out to Basara, who feels it from the apartment. It's like, did she just call out to me? But Giggle's able to stop it by hijacking the mech, and he then grabs Civil. And he's like, he being Giggle's like, okay, why is this happening? And he is like, Gebelnitch wants you dead, so I'm gonna kill you. And we get a quick flash of the planet Veruta, where Giggle's true body starts stirring a bit. And the recon squadrons are being torn apart everywhere. There's no way out. And Exidol's like, so I guess we gotta do this livestock option, yeah? And Max is like, nope. Fold everything out. And Exidol's like, that's really risky. And he's like, I know, but just do it. That's how we started a TV show 10 years ago by this point, so we could probably do it. So they get ready to fold. But again, and they proceed with it, and Max orders everybody to coordinate with all the ships so they all fold out at the same time. Gebelnitch is liking this because it means the spiritual levels are going up. However, the folds crap out because Volgo is there and putting out satanic interference, just using a big pentagram to keep everything from going. Did call them devils, and I just start thinking Doom again. My goodness. Boy. And Gebelnitch calls into the Macross 7 bridge. Is like, this isn't working. It's useless. Just stop. Stop trying. Bye-bye. And Max orders the Emerald Force and the VF-11s to take out Valgo, but he has friends, so it's not going too terribly well. And Gamblin comes in to join the fight as well. Doesn't have any affiliation, but he is kind of taken aback. Let me see here. That's the next episode. He's taken aback by something, but we'll see that next time. And the Sound Force hops in on the scene as well. Sound Booster's right behind them. They quip up and fire Holy and Lonely Like at Valgo, and Gamblin's running interference in the meantime. Giggle gets shot down, and Satan grabs her, and Basar is able to sense this and goes after her. He's all like, she showed me the universe, I gotta save her. And he's very happy that Sybil's gonna be dead soon, but Giggle flies on in to take the life suck hit for her. And Basar then arrives, and blasts a sound wave over at Satan. He's gone. He's scared. But Giggle doesn't care what happens as long as Civil's all right. So he flies on off and starts singing. And this takes Ray and Mylene off guard. It's like, what? And Basara's like, I fuck with this. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know it's right, singing before I do. And he joins in on the duet. And they start singing Power to the Dream together. And this completely pushes Satan away, but he's like, ah, no. And he flies on in and kills Giggle before trying to target Civil again. So he gets knocked away.
It's a fucking, like, not brutal, but just the way it cuts the music out.
Yeah.
As soon as, like, he gets hit. Ah, really good death scene.
Yeah, and he flies off and, like, there's no life in his eyes. Yeah, it's... Woo! But Civil starts screaming, and this awakens Giggle's true body, and this just giant monster that arrives on the scene. And this also drives Vafita a bit nutty, because Proto Devlin, she gets all drum crazy. And Giggle is not going to let anybody kill Civil, and just plans to kill them all, and he ends up turning himself into a black hole with his power. And the band starts singing again. This protects him from the black hole's power. And Basara starts pleading with Giggle to stop because it's going to kill him. But this ends up taking out Velgo, which disrupts the field and lets everybody finally fold out. And Max is like, okay, we're out of here. We're out of here. But they're able to fold away. But the planet is imploding from all the force of Giggle's power in the black hole. Gebelinch is pissed about all this, but orders a fold out anyways, because, yeah. And from the outside of the planet, Basara and the crew are watching, dejected what just happened to Planet Lux and Giggle. And Max on the bridge is not happy with all the lives he lost to get out of there. Civil is floating in the debris of the planet with a dying Giggle. Who keeps singing to her, my soul for you, as he and the planet continue to melt away. Basara ends up picking on up where he left off, and Civil's just kind of dumbfounded sitting in the debris. And the episode ends as the fleet has all survived, but the Flower Girl watches on as the shell goes up on City 7, revealing the vastness of space. Boy, that's...
Goddamn.
Mm-hmm. That's a way to go out.
Yeah, quite a bit, quite a bit's been happening.
Yeah. So, boy. That was sad to see Giggle go. I forgot how he went the last time I watched, because I thought he just kind of slumped over, but I'm like, oh, right, he turns into a black hole. And, yep. And freezes an entire planet. How about that?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, like, that was, like, the... That's what the Proto-Devlin are really like, and this is more a question, because I wasn't entirely positive when I was watching. That's what they really like, but they use human hosts to not tear space-time.
I think so, but I think, like, in Giggle's case, because he's probably more like Satan or Velgo, but he was just so pissed and probably woke up before he's supposed to that he's just like, fuck it, I'm gonna blow it all up.
Got it.
That's what I'm thinking anyways. But yeah, the Proto-Devlin, unless they're fully awake and just possess somebody, because I know that's pretty much what Gebelinch does.
Mm-hmm.
So But, because I think there is some stuff showing what happened to those people before they were possessed by Proto-Devlin and stuff I had in the Plus, in the 7 Plus stuff, so we'll see that when we see that. So, yeah. I don't have anything else on this. You want me to just move on over here? Do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, no, not really a whole lot to say, unfortunately.
So like,
I feel like usually it's my duty to do these end of episode, like, here's an analysis, but I don't just, really have much to say.
This is the character we thought was a mindless gruff grunt. You end up really liking, just decided, I'm going to turn myself into a black hole and sing as I die. And I'm like, okay.
Because it's nice. I think the thing that makes... Actually, okay, I do have something to say. I think the thing that makes Giggle
work for me, and what makes his heel face turn work for me is I think, because there's definitely a mounting frustration with the character, within the character, and I think something really cool that happens is that he finds no other way to express his frustrations, his fears, and his insecurities, other than to finally start singing. And he becomes more comfortable with the idea of singing, and he's putting himself out there more and more frequently until he finally joins Neki Basara to sing. And that's, I don't know, that's a really nice cap on his character, I think.
I agree. Because it's dude has grown a lot. He's learned what emotions work.
Yeah, like, I was not expecting that character development from Giggle. You know, from, like, episode 2 or 3 or whenever he first appears.
Yeah, because when he first shows up, he's just jobber commander, and now he's, like, in my opinion, like, maybe has more impact than Kamjin ever did.
I feel like that's a bold statement, but it also feels like a correct one, you know?
Yeah, like, Kamjin becomes a person, feels changes. Iconic
to me, but at the same time, I think, yeah, there's definitely a lot more character to Giggle than Kamjin.
Like, maybe more concrete change other than, hey, I know what fucking is now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, because that...
Hey, I know what fucking is now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no, that's actually what happens, though, but at the pretty same much. Time, it's just funny to phrase it
yeah.
like that.
Yep. but, my goodness. Yeah, so I kind of feel comfortable with that statement, but who knows, who knows? Anyway, let's roll on into this next one. Again, we just get a recap on, damn, Giggle, you just had a big death. How about that? And Basara is at the apartment just kind of strumming, kind of going on over all this in his head. And back over at the studio, they're starting to cut together old battle footage for a music video or some kind of project. And Ray is surprised that the UN gave all this footage to Akiko to use. He's like, I don't know about this. Like, are they trying to use it for propaganda or something? And she's like, no, no, nothing like that. And Akiko's like, you know, Basara leaving and coming back had an effect on you, right? And it's like, I don't know. It's like, oh, come on, it definitely did. And he's like, no, I'm sorry if I'm a little scatterbrained. Because, you know, I'm kind of thinking more about what the military plans to do with us now that we're kind of past the planet in this new stage of things. And after a little bit, Akio's like, oh, you have to be at the base for repairs, right? He's like, yeah, you got a point. And on the ship, their ship, Hiei and Gepelnitch are going over the loss of Valgo and the planet. And though a setback, Gepelnitch is like, oh, this is fine. Our plan can continue. But I want Civil dead. No, we don't want anything close to what happened with Giggle happening again. So, Hiei, you're going to go kill them. Just go do it. And out on the highway, Mylene and Gamblin are driving out to a date. And he's made up his mind about not returning to the military. And she's like, then why did you come out in the last fight? You're like a civilian now. And he's like, well, I guess it's kind of like how Basara was operating in the beginning, I guess. I'm doing that now. And she's like, what? Given how rich you are, that's a surprise. And at the restaurant, Gamblin isn't quite sure what he's doing next with his life. But she's like, whatever. You figure that out. And afterwards, they go to an Alice Holiday concert. And she mentions after Alice finishes up the song, it's like, I can't see you being anything other than a pilot. And he's kind of shocked by it, or maybe endeared. His face was a mix of, you think just that of me? Or it, like, the twitch in his eyes at that moment made me go, there's a little bit of heartwarming here, but also I am now having identity crisis myself now that you mentioned that. So who knows? Who knows? Back on Battle 7, Max, Exidal, and their crew members are going over just what they learned about the ruins. Exidal's still shaky about all this, and Max like, get a hold of yourself, man. And Exidal's like, I don't know, it's in my blood. And one of the people going over the information is like, that's in line with what happened at the mayor's office with Civil, so, you know. And they go over just footage of the different proto-devil and they've accounted so far, and they're going, so their original forms are designed for multiple purposes before they were possessed and turned into this nasty stuff, so, you know. And they confirm that some items from the ruins have been recovered. Chiba is working on the boosters right now on the science ship, but he's going to be accompanying a very worried Exidal to take a look at it later. And, Flower Girl's still on her spot on the hill, just chilling. I did mention earlier, I may have forgotten, she does have a new boombox, so she got that taken care of.
Yeah, the Flower Girl gags have been pretty one and done, or not one and done, but like, quick.
Yeah.
These last couple episodes.
This round, it's like, she's here, she's not dead, she's just here.
It's like, she's gotta appear in every episode, don't worry.
We're meeting our quota. And Chiba and his boys are in the shop or working on the Valkyries while Ray and the band are just chilling. The VF-19 is pretty beat up considerably despite that, in pretty good shape, despite everything that happened to it while it was out and about. Barton then shows up and it's like, you guys gotta hurry up. This is taking too long, and the friggin' Basara, the jamming birds suck, but I need them to be good. You know, just regular Barton nonsense.
Some tasks are just impossible.
And Hiei shows up for another attack with a fleet of mechs, and the Valkyries are deployed in response. Oh, and they decide, hey, let's put out the jamming birds again. And this is their second actual fight.
Great.
Yeah. And the Sound Force is on standby, but, you know, obviously not going out because repairs. And Gamlin arrives on the scene, but he's still kind of not great after thinking about what Mylene said to him and kind of starts screaming as he enters the fight. And the crew, sans Basara, head out to start singing. But Basara ends up breaking through anyways, despite the fact that the Valkyrie is really messed up and the MPs were trying to keep him away from it. So, yeah. But anyways, Chiba sends out the sound boosters to join him. Mylene's like, why are you out here? Like, is the Valk okay? And Basara just kind of shrugs it off. Basara is able to free the shoulders. He's able to free up those shoulders, get them good rotator cuff movement. I mean the soldiers, not his shoulders. Stretching is good, though. And Max is like, hey, get out of here. Go. Shoo. And Hiei's mad about his mind control not working despite it being the best mind control ever. But Geplinus is all like, ah, don't worry about that. I got a plan. Hiei then starts trash talking Giggle to Basara. And then this eggs Basara on. It's like, I'm going to sing to you too. You're going to be singing with me too soon, you motherfucker. So, yeah. And the blast, song blast, gives Gamlin the chance to take out Hiei's mech. And, hey, look, Flower Girl again. She's here. And it's a sleepy night on the bridge after the battle. But that's not the case at Firebomber's home concert venue. It's busy. People all around. And Akiko is planning on using the footage at this event. But she has a little special footage that got thrown on in from a special source. And the concert starts. Basara hang glides on in. And they are playing the Submarine Street, and the footage starts playing overhead of all the battles and how they really got up to this point. But surprisingly, this includes photos taken of Basara singing to Civil. And Basara is like, I'm cool with this, when Akiko decided to put them in.
But who got those pictures?
Huh, how about that? Person who took the photos, Janet, the reporter from a couple episodes back, And, hey, it's Michael there, too. And she's remarking how it's like, yeah, I just wanted to use these photos how Basara wants. And he's like, well, you could have become rich and famous. And she's like, no, seeing him made me want to do real work. I don't care about fake shit. I want, like, the Galactic Pulitzer. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I'm done with this tabloid shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as Basara keeps playing, he thinks back on everything. And in the last shot, he starts crying as he plays.
So good.
And that's...
So good.
It's so good. And that's the episode. Honestly, my last note on here. This episode is kind of a clip show in a way, but...
It feels a little messy in some ways. Like, but I think the original scenes that kind of string the clips along are really good.
Yeah.
Because
it puts it together. At least it's not just a straight up clip show. It's just like, yo, they're playing the concert and the clip show is playing behind them.
Right.
And I did notice some like old footage used throughout of like Basara breaking through the military police and stuff. I'm all like, y'all being clever with what you got. You're saving your money right for the last 10 episodes here.
It's kind of like the Fever Dream episode in the original Matt Ross.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking that just too, actually.
Really evokes that same kind of like, all right, let's do a clip show. We'll put an interesting narrative around it, though, so it doesn't just feel like a recap episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we'll go guns blazing with the with what comes next.
Yeah, because this feels now very much, hey, we're going to chill just for a small minute before we literally get into the end game of the series, because... Yeah.
Calm before the storm, so to speak.
Because, you know, the next episode, Dylan, is episode 40. That means there's like 10 episodes left of this show. So, yeah. Whoa, we in the home stretch now.
It's really weird, like, feeling like knowing that the end's coming in like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. Before there's...
But I'm excited to see it.
Oh, me too.
And, God, there was, like, a couple things I was going to talk about, but now I can't remember.
They're
really hammering home that, Gamlin and, Mylene's relationship mirrors, Hikaru and Minmay's.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just, like, really fucking pressing the pedal, or stepping the foot on the gas. Yeah. That's the term I was looking for. And it feels good. Because I would hate for people to walk away from the original Macross and thinking like, oh, they were just too different. There was no way they could make it work out. Macross 7 feels very much like that was just Hikaru and Minmay. Like, there's an infinite amount of people with infinite, like, interests and conflicting interests and all that stuff. So it's not an impossibility. It's just it didn't work out between those two characters.
And though on similar tracks, Mylene and Gamlin are very different characters from Hikaru and Minmay. So
right,
they're
both way more emotionally mature.
Yeah, like the only thing I think even super close to that I could think of right now is the whole you just see me as a pilot thing, and that's about it. So we'll see how that plays out with Gamlin. Because it seems like that struck a chord with him in a way that who knows if it, again, it's just a whole identity crisis thing. Because, again, that's kind of all he's done up to this point before he decides, I'm going to Basara it up.
I can't wait to see what the payoff of Gamlin's character is going to be. Like, I say that as in I'm not enjoying the character and I'm waiting for a payoff. But I mean it more in terms of, like, They're building up to something with him.
Yeah.
And I'm still not entirely sure what it is. So it's going to be cool to see where he goes in the next 10 episodes.
Oh, yeah. And also, like, he shows up in Dynamite 7, too. So just a little bit.
Sick.
But
okay.
That show's about whales. We'll get there. But you'll...
Yeah,
you'll...
I'm like... Because I think I know, like, I read, like, a snippet on Dynamite 7, but I have no clue what that actually means or entails.
Space whales. Just get comfortable with the Japanese word for whale. Just feel that Kujira inside you and just hold it tight and just say it 50 times in front of a mirror. And that's Dynamite 7.
Okay. Sure.
You'll know what I mean when we get to it.
I hope so.
But anyways, that's all I really have for these ones. Again, it's always fun to sit down and watch these. And also, I realized this. Hey, Dylan, you know how long we've been doing this show despite the occasional
hiatus?
Yeah.
Has it been 2 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
Yeah, that was my thought, too. Because it felt like we started doing this show, like, not that long ago still.
Yeah, it feels like it's been, you know, maybe a year at most. Mm-hmm.
But two years? Damn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. That's nutty. Just think by the time we hit the 3 year mark, we'll probably be, I don't know where we'll be. It's a good question.
Probably, I would imagine well, actually there's a lot of Macross 7 to still get through, I guess.
Yeah.
And then there's Macross 0. Yeah, I don't know where we'll be. I was gonna say probably finishing up Macross Frontier, but now that I think about it, we might not get that far.
Yeah. And now I think, oh, we'll probably make a couple excuses to watch some other stuff and record episodes in the meantime, too. Because I don't know about you, dude, but I think once we're done with the 7 nonsense, we might take a couple breather episodes before we get back into it.
Out of curiosity, do you think we should finish watching the Macross 7 associated stuff before we move on?
Yeah. Associated stuff, and then we can put a pin on it, and then when we watch Frontier, we'll watch Flashback 7 and just sit back and be all like, hey, we ate all our vegetables so we can enjoy this.
Okay, cool. I have no clue what to expect. I've said that multiple times on this show, but it'll be really cool, because yeah, it's almost like I'm filling in the gaps in a way.
But that hey, maybe we can get really depressing around Christmas time and watch War in the Pocket.
I thought you were going to say Neon Genesis Evangelion, so thank you for suggesting War in the Pocket instead, because I'm like, we're not going to have time to watch all of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
It's because it's a Mikimoto design show, so you know. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
So yes, but anyways, plans and more stuff aside, we will see you guys next time. Before we do that, we got to do plugs. My goodness. As always, you can find us on anchor.fm/dudeyouremember. Awesome site. They push us out onto everything you listen on. So Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. Give us a review in that platform of choice if you'd like. We're here. We love hearing from you. And as always, speaking of reaching us, we're on social medias, Facebook and Twitter /@ Do You Remember, respectively. And then also, if you want to email us, dyrmcast@gmail.com. And as always, huge thanks to Mr. Chris Eakins, artist and game designer and does a million things of the game Risk System, for providing the show's key art. To see more of his work, check out at RiskSystem_game on Twitter. RiskSystem is out now on PC, on Steam and Itch. But hey, if you have one of those Xboxes, it's coming out on March 5th. So check it out there. I'm still crossing my fingers that's part of Game Pass, just because I want as many people as possible playing that game, because it's dope. It's underrated. It's
quite good.
It's underrated. More people should play
it. If you like mecha anime, and I know you do, you know, if you like anime, if you like dogfights in your anime, and I know you do, you should check out Risk System, because it's really cool. It's a fun game.
It's real good.
It's real good. In fact, I should buy it again on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
I already have the DRM free, but I'll send Chris. I'll send him some more money.
Yes,
because you know they guy deserves it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Give him all your money. And then next year, Dylan, take me backstage and show me how you tango in the sector.
There we go. I am part of two other podcasts, Backstage Gaming, which has been on a bit of a hiatus. But Backstage Gaming, we talk about video games and how video games can convey experiences and tell stories. And we look at it through the perspective of fine arts, of the fine arts degrees that we have. It is myself and my co-host is Chris Wilson, guest of this show. Wonderful, wonderful person. We have fun. We also, we are also part of the podcast Tango Sector, season two of The Unexplored Places, which is an actual play podcast. Season two, Tango Sector, uses the game system Scum and Villainy, so it's a fun space, like, you know, high-octane space, swashbuckling, science fiction ride. We play criminals and smugglers, and we're at war with the police. It's really, I don't know what's going to happen to my character. And neither do you. But if you want to find out, you should check out Tango Sector on unexploredcast.libsyn.com. That is LIBSYN.
Sick.
And then also to plug Backstage Gaming, you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, all that good stuff.
Do you have a live journal?
I do not have a live journal. Should I get a live journal?
I don't think live journal exists anymore.
I don't either, which is why I asked.
But on the bright side, you do have a Twitter. What's that at?
You can find me on Twitter. My handle is at the THA underscore DILA, the Dilla.
He gonna frill ya. Ha ha, ha ha. The joke I make all the time. It's the Dilla. And if you want silly jokes and pictures of Ultraman eating a hero sub, you can find me at Rider Strike on Twitter. So yeah, that was this week. We'll see you guys later. Y'all stay safe. As always, wash a hand, wear those masks. Also, Black Lives Matter, Trans Lives Matter. Yeah, so y'all take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, Patrick.